Today I hope to start a new sutta, because so far we were discussing Anapanasati Sutta, and I thought of taking a new sutta. This is actually next to Anapanasati in the Majjhima Nikaya, and this is also really related to Kaya Anupassana. Actually, Anapanasati Sutta elaborated in all four Satipatthana and taking us more deeper towards the complete attainment level even. But in Hayagata Sati Sutta, Buddha didn't go to that level, but using very much like for beginners to how one can use effectively Anapanasati to take our attention back to the body to avoid various distractions. So I have summarized here the sutta. So it is if we consider the story behind this sutta, there is one occasion where monks were discussing about benefits of kayagatasati, benefits of mindfulness on body. So at that time, Buddha approached that place and he asked what was the topic that they were discussing. And then they explained that we were praising you, we were appreciating you, because you have given us these various techniques to take our attention to the body, to avoid various distractions using various techniques which are related to the body. So then Buddha started to elaborate, telling what are the precise ways or more accurate methods one can use body to develop mindfulness, to develop awareness. So this sutta, therefore, I have given a little summary here. So it explains about how one can improve mindfulness using the breath, breathing, and how one can improve mindfulness using various postures, and how one can use various other day-to-day activities to develop mindfulness. And again, how one can balance one's mind if it comes to any kind of wrong understanding, any kind of what we call as compact view, compactness. Sometimes we call ghanasanya in Pali. So this compactness, compact view, how one can overcome that using bodily parts. And again, how one can go deeper using elements that actually helps to avoid any kind of a self-view in ourselves. And again, similarly, to give a different perspective about our life, rather than thinking that we may live forever and having kind of a conceit, how one can come to the earth, how one can be well-grounded using various channel ground meditations. And again, he is taking us even to the jhana, to the absorptions. And those are the techniques elaborated in this sutta. And then there's a whole list of encouraging similes Buddha is talking here. And again, a lot of benefits are also mentioned. So this is how the whole sutta elaborated. So I hope to go one by one on these various topics. So today is actually a simple topic, and this is quite familiar to you. And this is mindfulness on breathing. This is what actually we have discussed during last couple of months. And so this information might be familiar to you. Anyway, even if there are any beginners, or if you like to refresh your attention, probably we can pay our very little time, spend some time here. So, first of all, Buddha says, so you need to find a suitable place. Because for Anapanasati to begin, you need to have a well-balanced posture, fairly suitable place. Because then only you will get the kind of a conducive environment for your meditation. So that's why we are coming to a monastery, or that's why we are going to a forest. So that is why we are finding a silent place, because that is much helpful at the beginning. But as you improve your mindfulness, as you improve your concentration, it may be possible to even keep your attention on the body, or if you can keep your attention, you can keep your mind still, even in a fairly difficult area, even in a noisy place. But at the beginning, it is difficult. In the beginning, you need to have a fairly favorable conditions to continue your practice. So that's why, therefore, Buddha encourages to find a suitable place that would be a more silent place and a pleasant place, keeping everything in a tidy rather than a sort of a congested whatever place. And this is kind of a pleasant place, and you need to have that pleasantness, kind of tidiness, and everything looks pleasant. So that actually gives a pleasant environment to the mind, and it really helps. And then Buddha asks us to prepare the posture. And as you all know, we need to, the best posture is to sit cross-legged. And if not, you can take a chair. And that chair may not be too much comfortable, but a typical chair with a, you know, not too much comfortable and also not uncomfortable. So that is what the posture, and you can keep your head straight, neck straight, and maybe your hands one on top of the other, or maybe resting on the lap or resting on knees, and you can sit cross-legged. Or if you are on a chair, you can keep your legs a little closer. So likewise, you can prepare your posture. So this posture, more you keep well balanced, it's easy for you to meditate for a long time. But if you are leaning onto a single side, then it might give little disturbance in between, and maybe little pain can arise. So it can give a little disturbance, obstacles to your meditation. Therefore, finding a well-balanced, symmetrical posture is much suitable. And then Buddha starts with a very simple establishment of mindfulness. Sato asa sati, sato pasa sati. So mindfully he breathes in and mindfully he breathes out. So basically, we don't need to do any kind of forceful breathing. But unfortunately, sometimes when we are trying to be mindful about our breathing, unknowingly our breathing can be a little forceful. So, but later you can adjust these things. You can't find the best balance at the very beginning. It might take some time to recognize this very balanced breathing style, but it doesn't matter. But even when you are trying to keep your attention on breathing, even if it is little artificial, you can carry on. But later you can do refinements to overcome any kind of forceful breathing. But if possible, I mean, what is necessary is natural breathing. You are allowing the body to breathe as it likes, and there is no any intentional breathing. You know, the breathing happens by itself. You don't need to do any thinking or intention to breathe. Therefore, just allowing the body to find the natural balance. How deep it wants to breathe or how shallow it wants to breathe doesn't matter. So you are simply allowing the body to breathe while you become like an observer. So simple awareness on breathing helps us to come to the present moment, because breathing is an ongoing process unless we die in between while meditating. So far it hasn't happened. But anyway, so breathing being a natural phenomenon, natural process going on, so it's always giving us some raw material for our mindfulness, raw material for our practice. So we are taking the advantage from that. So I mean, there may be various techniques you might need something outside, but here the beauty of breathing is quite natural and it is available. So finding the exact position where the breathing touches or where the breath touches is sometimes some teachers emphasize, but at the beginning it is not necessary and it might be difficult for a beginner, because you know, I mean, when the mind is distracted towards the past and the future, and again if you are trying to find out the exact location where it is touching, then it is impossible. But Buddha actually doesn't tell like that at the beginning. So he simply says, just be aware there is a breathing happens. Okay, right now in breath happens, right now out breath happens. So it is very simple. So it's kind of a doable. It is not so difficult. But rather he starts with a very natural, possible place where you are simply being aware. When it is breathing in, you can be aware. When it is breathing out, you can be aware. That's it. But unfortunately, our mind doesn't like to be with the breath because it is very neutral experience. Breathing is not pleasurable and it is not so painful, but rather it is quite neutral. So therefore, our mind does not appreciate being with such experience. So it likes to distract towards the past and the future. So therefore, for a beginner, at the beginning, it might be a little difficult to keep your attention on breath. So there are additional techniques that we can use, like counting, for example. Say, while breathing in happens, you can say one. When breathing out happens, again, you can say one. When breathing in happens, the next time, you can say two. When breathing out happens, you can say two. Again, next time, when breathing in happens, you can say three. Breathing out happens, again, three. So likewise, you can continue till 10. And if you are mindful throughout the session, so you can reach till 10. After that, again, you can come back to 1. Assume that you lost your attention in between. You reached, say, till 5. At that time, you lost your attention. Probably you can come back to 1 again at that time. Rather than continuing from there, you can come back to 1. So it gives you some indication that still your mind is not that tamed. Your mind couldn't pay enough attention to breathing because it distracts. But later you will understand, as your practice grows, you will understand now you can maintain your attention for a considerable period of time on breathing. Say there are 100 breaths, 200 breaths in succession. So you can keep your attention each and every breath, and that becomes possible as you continue. But don't expect this kind of a skill at the beginning. It is quite obvious that our mind gets distracted towards various memories, to various future plans, expectations. That is quite natural. So don't blame yourself. Don't discourage yourself. Rather, this is quite natural because we are living in a fairly busy environment. We may be engaged with various other activities, so our mind is fairly restless. So in order to calm down our mind, so this breathing really helps. So at the beginning, probably you can take a couple of long breaths in order to come back to yourself, to the body, and then you can allow body to naturally breathe. So then you don't need to put a lot of effort. Rather, it's a matter of keeping your attention at the nostril. So, I mean, for different people, different way it might happen. So sometimes it may be fairly closer to the nostril, or fairly sometimes for the others, fairly to the upper lip. Doesn't matter. You can keep your attention on this area. You don't need, as I said in the beginning, you don't need to exactly find the location where it is touching. And you can simply be aware in this area closer to the nostril, and that is more than enough. Because you know it is in-breath, you know it is out-breath. And again, as I said, various other techniques like counting you can be used in order to calm down. But later, when your breath calms down and when your attention grows, mindfulness grows, you need to stop discounting. All these techniques are merely helping aids which you don't need as you are confident and when mindfulness is fairly grown, fairly established. Similarly, you can use noting or labeling. Probably, I mean, counting is a little difficult and it is fairly occupying the mind. But on the other hand, simple noting is another technique. Say, for example, when you feel in-breath, you can simply say in. When you feel out-breath, you can simply say out. In, out. You can keep this labeling, noting for a long time till mind become quiet, till mind become fairly tamed. Till the mind starts to be with the breath. When mind is fairly established with the breath, so that means it is well synchronized. Now the mental attention and the physical breathing is well synchronized. So this, when these two processes are well synchronized, so it is quite natural. Then you don't need to struggle. Then you don't need to spend a lot of strength or effort to do this. So at that time, actually, you need to reduce the effort. Otherwise, you can't continue. Because if you are doing this practice with extremely hard effort, then at the beginning, it may be useful. But as our mind calms down, as our mind improves, then slowly, slowly, we have to calm down. Slowly, slowly, we have to relax the mind. So once the mindfulness is fairly established, then Buddha takes us to the next level. That is number 4 mentioned here. So then you can find out. You are now a little inquiring. You are a little examining the breath. Is it long? Is it short? I mean, it is a kind of a comparison actually. When you are keeping your attention on breath, at the beginning, you can't find out whether it is long or short, whether it is say warm or cold. All these minute details are available when your mindfulness is growing. Actually, here Buddha is paving the way to improve clear comprehension, sampajanya, because it is not merely mindfulness, but now mindfulness is coupled with clear comprehension, sampajanya. So in order to introduce this sampajanya, Buddha is taking other steps. So now he is asking us to see comparatively whether the in-breath is longer now, whether the out-breath is longer now. That means, suppose you are simply watching the breath and now compared to the previous in-breath, now the present in-breath appears long. Appears long in the sense it you experience in-breath for a long time. Similarly, the out-breath, you are now experiencing it for a long time. It does not mean that you are purposely making the breath longer, but rather it's a natural effect, but you can recognize, you can carefully recognize compared to the previous in-breaths happened so far. Now the breathing pattern has changed. It is now a little longer. And as you keep your attention more on breath, probably you can, even though it is not mentioned here, you can see probably the in-breath is cold, maybe out-breath is warm, maybe in-breath happens in one nostril, out-breath happens in another nostril. So likewise, there are various other minor differences you can even recognize. That's fine. Actually, you don't need to stick to this kind of a list. So this is a kind of an aid. Don't take it too seriously, thinking only these facets, only this information are to be known. But if you can know various other details, fine, doesn't matter. Everything indicates that our mindfulness has grown. Our clear comprehension has grown. Actually, there is no benefit of seeing whether breath is long or short or any, whether it is warm or cold. But what it means is, by recognizing this information, our mind being developed. It is not that we are doing any kind of an experiment like a scientist on breathing. Now there are maybe various doctors, scientists, maybe they want to check the percentage of oxygen or percent the length of the breath or any other that kind of an approach. We are also actually checking, or comparatively we are trying to understand whether it is longer or shorter, but it actually helps to develop the mind. We are not using any instruments, but rather we are trying to improve the quality of the mind. We are trying to improve the mindfulness. We are trying to improve the clear comprehension. Those are actually skills being developed when we are engaged in this practice. Now, when after that, Buddha is taking us even to recognize whether the in-breath is short, out-breath is short. So you can now understand the breathing evolves. Breathing is not something fixed. So don't expect your whole breathing, say mindfulness on breathing, has to be appear like similar. So it may evolve. So you need to have an open mind for it to evolve. Don't expect at the beginning, assume that you are able to recognize complete in-breath, complete out-breath. It appears like long. If you keep your mind fixed, then when it is becoming shorter, you might doubt. Rather, you simply have an open mind. You allow the breathing to change as it like. And however it is available, you are acknowledging it. And you are being aware of it. So your mind is not fixed. You don't have any preferences. And even the order might get changed. You don't have any sort of a complaint. Because you know it's a kind of a natural process, a bodily process. And your job is simply to be aware of it, aware of that. And then Buddha taking us to the next step. So he is asking to find out whether you are able to recognize that breathing does not immediately start. Say for example, in-breath does not immediately start, but it's a kind of a natural start. It is not an abrupt start. So it's very softly, very gently, very refined manner it is starting, and then it is improving, the intensity growing, and it is reaching to a kind of a threshold. After that, it is decreasing and ultimately disappear. And then there may be even a little gap just before the out-breath. Then out-breath also appears very gentle, very soft, very refined, and then that feeling, that intensity increases, and it also coming to some threshold, and then that also fades away and ultimately disappears. Just before the beginning of next in-breath, there's a gap again. So you are asked to see this whole breath cycle. Actually, if you like, you can see the whole body as well, rather than finding the breath, because that is also another way to do it. But sometimes for some yogis, that might distract, because at the moment we are trying to maintain some refined mindfulness on breath, and we are trying to recognize the beginning, middle, end of the breath. But if you keep your attention immediately to the complete body, what I am trying to tell is the all other parts of the body, so your mindfulness has to be widened. So it might cause distraction. So therefore, actually you can later observe the whole body, doesn't matter. So these skills, these possibilities are available in the future. For the time being, you can simply keep your attention on breath. And now we are trying to recognize how it is starting, how it is in the middle, how it is at the end. And then there's a little gap. How it is in the beginning of the out-breath, how it is in the middle of the out-breath, how it is in the end of the out-breath. Again, there's a little gap. So more and more you are keeping your attention on these subtle details, the beauty of this practice is that mind starts to calm down. Now, you might think that the breath has to appear with more and more detail as a result of your practice. Actually, that also happens at the beginning. But more and more you are looking at closer to the breath, actually your concentration improves, clear comprehension improves, and the whole body starts to calm down. And now the calming down process starts. Now, calming down process has to be facilitated. So don't expect the breath to appear in a gross way, in a gross manner throughout. Rather, as I said, breath evolves. At the beginning, it appears like little gross, but later it becomes soft, fairly smooth. And later, now very much like you can't even recognize whether it is in-breath or out-breath. To that level, the breathing refines. It appears like now breathing disappears. Almost like something is there, some kind of an indication is there to inform you that the body is breathing or simply the body is living. That's it. You don't have much detail. And Buddha asks us to facilitate this rather than encouraging any kind of doubts, thinking that I might die or I might lose enough, I might not get enough oxygen or any kind of that doubt, rather encouraging those kind of things, rather you simply allow things to happen. Now actually you have to take the back seat. Now you have to be really a passive observer rather than interfere in the process. Now you have to observe breathing with a very soft, very natural, passive manner. And you have to facilitate that. You allow the body to calm down. You allow the mind to calm down. So that's why it is mentioned, breathing in, tranquilizing the body deformations. Breathing out, tranquilizing the body deformations. So whenever breathing calms down, that indicates the whole body calms down. Whenever the whole body calms down, that indicates breathing also calms down. So this is actually fairly interrelated. So breathing is in a way the most essential ingredient, most essential component of our whole life. So when breathing calms down, that indicates the whole body calms down. When the whole body calms down, that indicates the breathing also calms down. So when we are doing this kind of a process, so Buddha explains two major benefits here, and he says, so the all various memories related to your home activities, maybe your office, maybe corona, maybe all difficult situations, maybe stock market, whatever it is that you are interested in, all starts to go away and your attention come back to the body. Now this all household information you will lose. So don't worry that you forgot to go to market or to go for groceries and all these things, because everything going to disappear, because all your attention now coming to the body. And that is one information. So this gehasita sarasankappa te pahiyanti, whatever your household thinking. Say you want to buy groceries, you want to make a frock, you want to expand your house, whatever it is. So all these things disappear. Now all your mind come back to the body. So that is the next benefit where Buddha is telling, ajjattameva chittang santittati sannisidati ekodi hoti samadhiyati. Now actually in the beginning of the practice, little bit of concentration is necessary. Kind of a collected mind is necessary, then only we are able to clearly see. Now, that is why, I mean, we are trying to see various stages of breathing, various facets of breathing, whether it is the beginning, whether it's the middle, this is the end. So these are, we are trying to sort of refine our attention, refine our mindfulness, refine or improve our clear comprehension. Now, as a result, the whole external information may go away, all the various perceptions may go away, but your attention is now fairly concentrated on this breath. As a result, now you can't think about your day-to-day activities or household information, whatever it is, but you are now well synchronized with the breath. Now, therefore, Buddha says, mind starts to live with the body. It is coming back inside. It's very much like internally it is become quieted. It's not talking now. Typically our minds are talking. Inner chatter is keep on and on. But the mindfulness on breathing actually has to calm down your mind. So too much thinking, sort of obsessive thinking, has to be stopped if you are practicing mindfulness on breathing. Because mindfulness on breathing has some direct effect on our thinking. While thinking, you can't do this practice. You have to slowly keep your attention more and more on this breathing process, which is a physical process. And when you are being successful in that process, the mental proliferation and various storytelling, inner chattering, all those have to be calmed down. Unless you do that, you can't reach number 7 specifically. So if you are reaching number 7, that indicates actually that is the number 4 in Anapanasati Sutta, if you can remember, that is number 4. So you can't come to that stage unless you give up too much thinking, unless you give up proliferation. And if you are able to succeed, that indicates your mind is fairly concentrated, very calm, very quiet. Now you have some pleasant mind. Now the mind stays in the body. Previously, you have to struggle to take your attention to the body. But now, the opposite. Now, even if you want to distract, mind doesn't want to distract. Mind doesn't want to go out. Because the mind feels comfortable being inside. Mind feels comfortable being with the body rather than going outside. Because why it is going outside is because that mind thinks that it is pleasurable to go outside. The pleasure is available outside. So that is a wrong perception the mind has. But as a result of continuous practice, mind learns that there is a kind of a pleasant abiding available inside the body. Simply being with the breath, just being within the framework of the body, is a kind of a pleasant abiding. So therefore mind doesn't want to distract now. And it is simply like you are keeping a comfortable chair inside the body and asking the mind to come and sit, very much like that. So this is what, so I want to discuss mention related to the Kayagata Sati Sutta. So actually we have discussed mindfulness on breathing, and next time we can discuss on 4 postures. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. And I open the session for questions.
Avasarai Bhante, there are 4 questions currently.
Yeah.
Question number 1 is a general question. Venerable Bhante, this is a follow-up question to the one about a layperson developing an unshaken mind. My mind is far from unshaken, but I can reflect that after some of these triggering events, my mind is either slightly less unsettled or the time period being unsettled is shorter as I see my mind more clearly. As you said last week, there are so many things that can happen in daily life that can cause our minds to become unsettled. In that moment, when I watch my mind as it is racing or having corresponding emotions or bodily sensations, for example, increased heart rate or breathing rate, I have tried to use some of my meditation techniques as a distraction until I calm down. And usually with time, most things do settle. But sometimes it feels like nothing works quickly enough at the time. What other strategies can you suggest to draw upon when caught up in emotions or thoughts to speed up this process of settling the mind? Thank you for your advice. That's the end.
Actually, sometimes we take things too seriously and we expect things to be in a different way rather than the present way. We have some kind of a framework. So this has to be like this. So my husband should behave like this. My, wife should behave like this. My children should behave like this. our government should behave like this. So like we have that kind of a fixation in our mind. So whenever things are happening differently, so we get upset. So we become emotional. We think that so everything we want to have in our way. But if we are able to avoid that kind of a thinking, so I think that is the best thing we can do. But unfortunately, we can't do it immediately. So we have these kind of expectations. We have these kind of frameworks. We project on towards the others. So as a result, we get upset. We get disappointed. Slowly, slowly, if we can recognize this disappointment, then you are trying to distract yourself. How about coming back to the mind and recognizing this disappointment, recognizing this little pain? There may be a little irritation at the moment available in the heart. Or there may be a little sort of a sorrow in the mind. So is this sorrow really useful? Or is this sorrow really, say, helpful to you? Or is it sort of an unsatisfactoriness? Is it kind of a suffering? So basically we can recognize this is suffering. So then once we recognize this suffering, probably we can understand what is the cause. What is the cause of this unsatisfactoriness? What is the cause of this suffering? What is the cause of this disappointment? So then we can understand, okay, we have some kind of a, this kind of a fixation, some kind of an expectation. So all these are in a way craving. So tanha, we want something to be different than the present manner. There is something happening in a particular fashion, but it, we want to be otherwise. We want to be appear differently. So if we can stop that projection, if we can stop that desire, if we can avoid projecting any kind of a framework, then it's a matter of calming down. Then it's a matter of opening of the mind, stopping that grasping, stopping that fixation. So that for slowly help us to reduce holding, reduce grasping. So again, mind calms down because we are the ones feeding with these fixations. We are the ones holding all these fixed views. But if we can recognize that how much suffering we are making to ourselves because of these fixations, because of these fixed views, because of these various expectations, then in a way, let things happen. I am having fairly unshakable mind. Actually, don't think that this is kind of a passive passivity or this is kind of escapism. We can do our best. We can contribute the best way, but there are still limits. I mean, we as human beings, we can't make the whole world perfect. But on the other hand, we can wear a shoe. We can wear a slippers rather than trying to flatten the whole world. So likewise, so we need to understand, okay, the whole world is like this. I mean, it is the way it is like in the Buddha's time. Don't think that the Buddha's time, they have a heaven in the earth. Even during the Buddha's time, there are various difficult situations. And even today, we have enough difficult situations. But the strength in the spiritual practice is how we can maintain unshakability, how we can maintain sort of a stillness of the mind, clarity of the mind, even amidst all these difficulties. So that is, in a way, it's a kind of a training for us. So you may be able to maintain the clarity of your mind, maintain the calmness of your mind when things are in a favorable manner. But when things go wrong, so you can't still maintain that. So that is the exercise. That is the training. How are you able to maintain that kind of clarity of mind, that kind of calmness, free from defilements, even when things go wrong? That is difficult, of course. But slowly, slowly, that is where we are strengthening our mindfulness or strengthening our spiritual skills. So otherwise, we can't actually strengthen ourselves. We might think that we are already anagami or we are already arahants while being not. But rather, all these difficult situations indicate that we still have various defilements. We still have various drawbacks. Still our spiritual capacity is not yet developed. So likewise, it is giving us some kind of an estimation about our own mind, own development, and therefore take it in a positive manner. So we can't actually have a perfect world. Instead, we are trying to develop unshakable mind with all these difficulties. Actually, there is a beautiful simile given by most venerable Kadavaddwe Jinavansa Mahathero. Actually, he is the one who started with Matra Sri Jnanarama Thero, this whole forest monasteries in Sri Lanka. And he is giving a very beautiful simile. And he is asking, now suppose there is one person who is traveling through a thicket. So it has various difficult thorns, pitfalls, bushes, and difficult obstacles are there. And he has to travel in the night. So he doesn't have a torch. He doesn't have a flashlight. So he get caught to all the serpents. He get bitten by snakes, and maybe he's caught with various other difficulties, get the thorns and all the difficulties he's going through, and assume that with lot of wounds and issues he's coming out. That is one scenario. And then he's asking, now assume there's another person. But the beauty is he's having a flashlight, he's having a torch. He is also going through the same path. That is, the path is not different. He is going through the same path. But the advantage is he has a torch. He has a flashlight. Using that flashlight, he knows where is the pitfall. He can recognize where is the pitfall. He knows where to be careful. He knows how to avoid all thorns. So he knows how to avoid various other obstacles, because his flashlight shows those. So with little damage or with little wounds, he can come out. So this is very much like our life. So don't expect being spiritual or you are now a meditator, don't expect the whole world be comfortable, whole world be really nice and pleasant abiding. There are always be difficulties, there are always be obstacles, but we have to have the flashlight. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 6. Mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Sir, I start the sitting practice after walking and focus on the breath. I can observe the differences of in-breath and out-breath for some time and the start, middle, end of the full breath. After some time, the breath starts to fade away, and often I observe more than usual number of thoughts come and go during this time. I could stay calm even with the influx of thoughts and observe the fading away of the breath. Recently, I started to experiment a bit with the thoughts and let my observation drift with one of the thoughts. I knew I was doing it and was mindful on the observation of thought, even though I was fully inside and engulfed by the thought. After some time, maybe 20 to 30 seconds, lost in thoughts, I checked how the breath or my primary object is and found that it is calming down and fading away without my attention or focus. Since I have observed this calming down process many times, I could immediately understand that this process has come from point A to point B without my involvement at all or without the observer. All this time I was thinking that there is an observer at the bottom of the pit, and the transformation of the breath and everything happens within the observation sphere of the observer. However, this direct experience tells me that there is everything else happening, and the observer comes afterwards. as an addition or the observer is mutually exclusive from this process. Seems like the bottom of the pit was flipped upside down. With metta, that's the end.
Actually we can say we are fully aware of the whole thing, but there is no a person observing. I mean, if we are thinking that I am observing or someone is observing, then we are going to a sort of a self view. Rather, the various skills are being now developed. So there are various thoughts going on, but awareness is available. Sometimes we get caught because there are the distractions or these thoughts may be very compelling. These thoughts may be very, really attractive. So we might even carried away. Even there is no person, but the mindfulness become weaker. As a result, some other thoughts get a little stronger. But as the mindfulness is growing, now it is taking the upper hand. Now it is taking the sort of rescue process. As a result, those defiled mental moments become less and less. So the recovery become natural. So therefore, actually, even though we start telling that I am meditating, I am developing mindfulness, likewise, actually what is happening is various mental skills are being developed. Actually, these skills are coming to the front. These various positive qualities are being developed more and more as we grow in our practice. So then the whole mechanism become clear. At the beginning, it is not clear, but more we engage in our practice, more we become an observer in a way. I mean, don't take seriously about the term. I mean, you are simply giving priority or prominence to the awareness. So now you can simply be aware of the whole picture. Rather than sort of narrow down the attention, now you have a broader environment, kind of opening of the mind. So actually the beauty of mindfulness practice is that at the beginning you are focusing your attention to a limited area. That is what actually we discussed during today's Dhamma sermon, where your attention being well focused onto the beginning, to the middle, to the end of the breath. So that is where a very refined mindfulness is available. But that is not the end. So as a result of this practice, so our mindfulness evolves and it expands. Now you have a kind of an expanded mindfulness. So now you can be aware of what is going on in the mind, what is available in the body, what are the feelings, what are the emotions, and how another person is reacting, another person is behaving. So you have a kind of a big picture about the present situation. So likewise, mindfulness improve and growing, so you are in a better position to step back and allow the process to happen. Rather than you interfere the process, now you understand, okay, things are happening in a different, in a certain fashion, in a certain manner. So you don't need to get involved. So this is where the Sanyojana being now not going to operate. You know, the term Sanyojana really means they are like shackles. So we all have shackles, 10 shackles we have. But more we practice, some of these some of these fetters going to open up, going to straight rather than become bent. I hope you understood what I am trying to tell. At the beginning, all these sanyojana, all these fetters appear like hooks. So whenever things are available, you get caught because of that. So you go and grab things. But as you develop, these sanyojana, these fetters going to straighten up. So therefore, mind does not go and hold. Mind does not go and interfere. Rather, it can stay still. Even when the eyes are seeing various sights, mind has its stillness. Mind has its calmness. When various sounds being heard, mind doesn't want to get distracted, rather mind like to be calm. When tastes are being sensed, when various tactile sensations are going on, and even when some slight thoughts appear in the mind, still you may have the sort of unshakability, you have the stillness of the mind. So that becomes your base, that becomes your refuge, and that is what we need to encourage. So this refuge, this stillness, this kind of unshakability, this kind of pureness of the mind, so this is what we need to encourage, and that is how we become more and more unshakable person, or kind of a person who can withstand various difficulties. And this may grow slowly, so we actually have to continue our practice. So as a result, you may understand, so you don't need to interfere the process. You can simply watch and things may happen naturally.
Question number 3 of 7 is a general question. Therwan Sarnai Bante. The question is, how does someone truly know if they are a stream winner? Is it quite important to check the status of the mind along the way? Much merits, Bante. That's the end.
So probably you can find a Buddha, then he will tell you. So unfortunately, Buddha is not available today. So anyway, Buddha has given a nice strategy. So if you want to really know, probably one thing is, it is available in Kosambya Sutta, in Majjhima Nikaya. He is giving a very beautiful list. So they are actually reflections. I can tell few among this list, a few points. Probably you can check whether you have these points now. So number one, he is telling, any of the defilements, I need to little explain the situation. Now typically when we are not mindful, assume that immediately you get an aversion and immediately you take an action and you might even kill an animal. We take a little rough example. Suppose there is an animal, there is a serpent, and you got angry and you immediately killed. So after that only you understand, okay, I killed an animal. So this is what we call as vitikkama, kind of a transgression level. But as we develop mindfulness, we don't go to the transgression level, and we can recognize these defilements while being in the mind. So that recognition become more and more earlier. So what I want to tell is that as your mindfulness improves more quickly, more earlier, you will recognize these defilements. So the first criterion to check, where Buddha mentioned here, is that none of the defilements can come to the transgression level and can come to the obsessive level without your knowledge. So, do you have this skill? So, you can check now. So that indicates, none of the defilements cannot immediately go to the transgression level and cannot immediately go into the obsessive level because you are well aware. So, if your mindfulness is improved, if the awareness is improved, so you are always sort of watching the mind. And when a defilement arises in the mind, so that practitioner knows about it. So when someone is not aware, not mindful, then it may grow, that thought may grow, he may start to think, he may start to proliferate, he may start to go to the transgression, he may going to kill the animal. So this happens very quickly. But as our mindfulness growing, so we clear the picture. Our mind become very clear. You can clearly see how these things happen. So therefore, the first criterion is that none of the defilements can get into the obsessive level or to the transgression level without your knowledge. So that is the first criterion. Another one is mentioned that when there is the Buddha's teaching being taught, when you are listening to Dhamma, you really get connected with it. You are not distracting the mind because you are now sort of experiencing it deeply. So when something very connected to the Dhamma being taught, so your attention is well established on that Dhamma sermon. So that is another criterion. Another one is that you get really happy when such a Dhamma being taught, when there is a beautiful Dhamma sermon going on, and it really, you really listen to it eagerly, attentively, and again, you get really happy because now you yourself is experience what is being explained, and therefore you really get happy. So this is another criterion. And again, there's another criterion telling that if there is any kind of a mistake happen, mistake done by that person, he is not going to hide it. Rather, he is going to open it. He is going to expose it rather than trying to hide it. So typically, when people do various mistakes, they still behave like saints. They still behave like I am a good person. But this is different. Here, he understood that he made a mistake and he reveals it. He exposes it and he is trying to correct it. So this is another criterion. So likewise, there are very beautiful information given here. So this is a little long list. There are seven criteria mentioned there. And Buddha says, so you have to reflect again and again whether you are now fulfilling these criteria. And if you are fulfilling, so don't still be hurried to determine that you are a Sotapanna. Rather, do it again and again. Do this reflection again and again. Because just by putting a label, just by adding a title, it can develop conceit. Because this whole path is going through in a kind of a humble manner. This spiritual practice is not for marketing. Spiritual practice is not for any kind of a personal gain. It is not for kind of a personal highlighting. Rather, it's a kind of a humble practice. More and more you develop the path, you become humble. You become a simple person. You become more human. And therefore, by adding a title to the head can be conceited, and one can become become a person, so and so, big, a kind of a big person, that indicates something going wrong. So therefore, Buddha didn't encourage even to know whether a person is a Sotapanna. If you consider his early stages of his life, so Buddha never has mentioned that someone is a Sotapanna. Rather, he encouraged people his bhikkhus to practice more and more so that they may reach the final goal. So, but later, with the introduction of various large majority of people to the sasana, he informed that these other latter stages are available. Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, these latter stages, lower stages are still available. Otherwise, actually, he is encouraging the final goal. So therefore, I mean, having some confidence is all right. And as I said, the path has to be well cleared. And again, as I mentioned, these criterion actually help us to have some assurance. But that also has to be a sort of an inner assurance, not for marketing or not for any kind of a advertisement.
Bhante, is it okay if we go a little bit over time today?
Yes, no problem.
Okay. Question 4 of 7, mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, for the first time I have been mindful on feelings at today's guided session. It seems quite interesting and profound. I have been practicing with breath, and suddenly the breath has gone out of the window and I was with the feelings as a pro. I could feel the posture as a frame sitting on the chair, and within that knowing, I was observing various feelings, pleasurable, painful, and neutral. Your guidance was excellent, and after some time, I observed that the mind was well collected and have reached the same kind of relaxed and calm state as in breathing mindfulness practice. When I checked if there is breath, checked if there is breath at all, it has become subtle and almost faded away as well. With these observations, should I continue with the mindfulness of feelings, forgetting the good old breath? That's the end of the question.
I mean, you can use both. I mean, don't forget the old friend. So if you need any help from the old friend, you can ask his help. But if you are confident with the new friend, you can associate the new friend. So actually, this is a kind of a growing practice. So that's why, I mean, even in the Anapanasati Sutta, that is why Buddha is taking us step by step. Actually, the first four steps he is telling Kanupassana, more related to the body. And as we grow, we have the capacity to go to the next level, the feelings. Actually, how we know we have the capacity? Actually, that we have to take the risk and get into the other stage and check. I mean, if we are not yet ready, then our mind going to distract. But if we are ready and if the necessary amount of quality is being developed, then still we can be comfortable while being in the next stage. So that is how we need to clarify. We need to be confident that now we are capable of developing Vedanupassana. Unless we don't know. Because there is no any measurement to tell. I mean, you can discuss, of course, with say teacher or whoever. But still, you yourself can take a little risk and get into the other stage, another practice, and see whether you can handle it properly. You can get the benefit from these other practices. And if you are able to get the benefits and you are comfortable, and nothing wrong in using these various practices.
Question number 5 of 7. Walking mindfulness. Dear Venerable Sir, at times when I'm doing walking meditation, I get a feeling of loneliness and a feeling like calling my mother. But given the time difference, it doesn't suit. And I'm not able to talk to her. So I stay on the lonely feeling and I get a sadness. I feel like running away from this sometimes, but I don't know what to do. Any advice is much appreciated with metta. That's the end.
Actually, the loneliness and the aloneness are different qualities. So when you are meditating, there is a different kind of a feeling you might come across. So that is where the mind likes to be alone. Mind doesn't want to get engaged with various other people or various other activities. And this is the kind of a positive quality we need to develop. Because now mind like to be independent. Typically, we think sort of safety or our pleasure, happiness is available from in the outside. But rather, when we develop our practice, so mind will understand, okay, I can be happy, I can be confident, I can be independent, even without attached to the other external conditions. So now mind is trying to be independent. So this is appearing like kind of a seclusion. This appears like aloneness. And this is a kind of positive quality that we can encourage. But on the other hand, this question is very much like a typical sort of loneliness, where you are losing kind of a loud one, where you are losing contact with the loud one. So probably you can give a call. Probably you can write a letter. And probably you can understand, actually, I mean, this is something you need to overcome within yourself. And it is not possible to be with your mother forever. You can't be with your father forever. Someday you have to be independent. Someday you have to be confident, even without them. So that is the nature. I mean, so are we ready to do that? It does not mean that we have to neglect or to forget our parents. What I'm trying to tell is, so we have to be somewhat strong within ourselves. I mean, more and more we attach to someone, more and more we have sort of a shakeability. we have a kind of a fluctuations in our mind, kind of frustrations in our mind. More and more we become independent, more and more we become matured. That indicates that we can be with them as well as we can be independent as well. We can, I mean, even when they are at their presence, we can be happy. Even with their absence, we still can maintain sort of equanimity rather than trying to always engage with the others. So this is something you can slowly develop. So I recommend you to somewhat strengthen yourself, because parents or others actually can't be with us forever. So someday we have to depart from them. So therefore we have to slowly develop our abilities, our skills to be independent.
Question number 6 of 7, mindful sitting. Mind resettles when breathing, then our thoughts become vivid. Do we analyze the thoughts? If so, how? Or do we let them come and go? I hope that made sense. That's the end.
Yeah. Actually, both approaches, actually, if you are confident to be face-to-face with the thoughts, that is one approach. But still, if you feel that I'm not yet confident to face the thoughts, when you try, you get caught and you go on and on in thinking and you get distracted. So that indicates better simply not to get entangled there. Still, you need to further be with the body, and you have to further develop mindfulness. You have to further develop some amount of clear comprehension to be with, while being with the body. So Kayanupassana has to be further developed, or Vedananupassana has to be further developed. But assume as a result of this practice, so as you mentioned, the mind become vivid, so the picture become very clear, thoughts are coming and going, you can clearly recognize them. So that means that your mental clarity has improved. So you can try now. You can see just by looking at with these thoughts, what is happening to them? Are they fading away? Are they growing? Are they sort of preparing kind of a proliferation? Or that you need to test. So kind of a risk is available at the beginning, as I mentioned before. So put it yourself to that risk and see. So anyway, first develop Kayanupassana and establish fair amount of mindfulness. Once you are confident, you can slowly look at the mind. You can carefully look at the mind. What is really going on in the mind? What are the thoughts available? Now actually you are looking at them while being in a safe place. So you are well established on mindfulness. And while being in that safe place, now we are looking at thoughts. It's like a kind of a, I mean, it is not simply you are trying to tackle them. But the first you establish yourself. First you are preparing the sort of the bunker. And while being there, now you can safely look at them. Even when they are inviting, even when they are trying to tempt you, you have the capacity to stay in this safe place. So that is the difference. At the beginning, we don't have such safe ways. At the beginning, we didn't have such capacity. But now we have. If you have, then you have that capacity and you need to test it.
Question number 7, and this is the last one that we have. Mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, is it feasible to keep mind free from any kind of thought? If yes, is it beneficial as much as being mindful about the breath? That's the end.
Can you repeat the question, Chaku?
Question number 7, mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, is it feasible to keep mind free from any kind of thoughts? If yes, is it beneficial?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what I mean. We were discussing even in the early stages of breathing. So this whole thinking starts to slow down. This is one feature of Anapanasati. So it is actually reducing excessive thinking, obsessive thinking, because it is taking our attention more and more to the body. So this, I mean, if you are able to completely stop it, I mean, don't think that you would die. So, I mean, the awareness is there. So pure awareness is available, complete mindfulness is available, mind has the clarity, but these thoughts are all external components. That's why Buddha is mentioning, Pabhasaram idam bhikkave chittang, tanchako agantukehi upakkilesehi upakkirittang. So the mind, the original mind, the sort of the fundamental level of mind is fairly pure, still, calm, and free from thoughts, free from inner chatter, free from proliferation. So that's this calmness, this clarity, this stillness, this spaciousness is available through the practice. And so once you are able to touch it, once you are able to reach such state, you have to encourage being there. It is very much like you are coming home. So far we were sort of traversing everywhere. I mean, we are going to there, we are going to others' houses, we are going to various places, other countries, never coming back home. Now only the practice has helped us to come to find out the home. So once you come back home, just rest, just be there. Nothing to do, because you have come back home. So far you were assumed that you were lost in a desert, or you are lost in a thick forest, and you are searching your home. And assume now you found it. How beautiful. And you simply can have a tea and rest. So probably I can send you some tea, Ceylon tea, and you can have a tea and just rest. And without thoughts. And it's a beautiful experience. Actually, it's very much like, suppose you are going to see a waterfall and you are looking at it. While keeping your mind calm, while keeping your mind quiet, free from thoughts. Assume that you are listening to music without having any thought. Maybe you are tasting some food without having any thought. You may be having some other experience without having any thought. This is possible and this is beautiful. And this is where actually our experience, so our practice is taking us. So more and more we have such calmness, more and more we have that kind of a clarity of mind. So the whole picture become clearer and clearer. And that is where we will understand the more deeper roots about our defilements. That is where we may understand the asava, anusaya, these various patterns, ill patterns, and all these things are somewhat clear to us then. Unless we reach this state, so we are simply at the surface level, never touching the ground of the mind. This is very much like the ground of the mind. The ground of the mind is fairly clean, fairly clear, and free from any turbulence.
That was the last question, Bhante. So we'll conclude. So today we had some good questions. There was, I think, one at the start about mind or thoughts in general. And actually, I think after that question, we had a whole bunch of questions come in. So it's great. So just one person saying something and then sort of prompts everyone else to ask similar sort of questions, which is good. As usual, we'd like to thank Bhante for helping us with this program and being here. I know he's very busy and giving up valuable time to actually run this program. We'd like to pass our merits to Bhante along with all the other people who helped organize it, as well as those who've seen and unseen participating and helping. And most of all to the participants, because without you, we wouldn't be able to run this program. So with that, I'd like to conclude. Theravan Sarnai, Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu.
Theravan Sarnai, Sadhu Sadhu.